Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Fred. I am responsible. I am accountable. I am capable of assisting people to find their true voice and then deliver it effectively into the world around us. With 40 years in mental health, 32 of them as a psychiatrist, and then a massive amount of conversations, including podcasting and expert speaking, keynote speaking, I have the opportunity to really see the magic that it takes to find one's authentic self and then deliver it effectively into the world. And if you're like me, you can see that now more than ever, that's what's called for. So today is that day. Now is that time. Come forth. Join me in the broadcast. You'll see on the other side of this at True Voice with Dr. Fred.
All right.
Sam, just give me a second. I'm almost done coming forth.
Yeah, I'm still coming fifth. Oh, Jesus. We are off to a bad start. We can only go upwards from here, I think. We're already down in the trenches.
Sam, I want to talk to you about some shit, man.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
So William is upstairs, and we've done some videos today. They're spectacular. We're going to do 8 more, and he's just setting us up for the nighttime shooting. So we're going to be just you and me today.
Okay. Rock and roll.
I want to talk to you about suicide.
All right.
I want this session to be
about talk about it, or should we commit it?
No, I don't think we should commit it or even talk about committing it.
Okay.
I mean, they say this shit's not monitored, but someone just heard it. You say that, so.
Yeah, okay.
I'm pretty concerned about the status of suicide these days, and especially in these last 4 days. Here's my thinking on this. I've been watching from an oblique angle ever since this the report of Twitch, you know, sad report of Twitch, a tragic death of Twitch.
Yeah.
And, you know, Twitch, I didn't know Twitch. I didn't know anything about Twitch until somebody told me that I should write a post on Twitch. And I wrote a post because I'm me and I apparently know a lot about suicide. So I should write a post on Twitch and that'll move the conversation forward. And I wrote a post that got a little bit of traction and, you know, then that's that. Now it's gone. But what I've noticed is that a lot of people really care about Twitch, but they don't care about Twitch, actually. They care about Twitch's suicide, supposed suicide. Oh, here's the thing. The report is that the man suicided. That's the report. And I'm not here to challenge whether he suicided. I don't know that. I don't know. Here's what I do know. The news is every so often has had some untruths in them, I've noticed. No matter what side of any angle you are, the possibility is that stuff gets reported. It's not exactly the straight truth. Do you agree that that's been kind of a cultural issue recently? This thing about truth in the news.
I think all news is true. So I think we're already off to a bad start here. We're not going to see the same. I think everything I read is true.
All right. Well, we can get started that way. That's fine.
No. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I'm thinking that the fallout from this, let's say that this was a nefarious death and it's like, no, dude, we can't really report what really happened. So we're just going to call it suicide. In fact, let's say that that happened with Anthony Bourdain too, or Kate Moss, or for God's sakes, even Robin Williams. Let's just say that shit might've happened that way. Let's just say, because if it would, that wouldn't be so hard to explain this news story. By the way, for all who are listening, I really seriously want to be heard that I'm not diminishing the incredible tragedy of the loss of Twitch and the probability, in fact, that it was suicide. I'm just saying that there's an ounce of me that isn't entirely certain that it was suicide. And even if it was certain, even if it was, like, even if I was there to see it, and, you know, could be made to 100% believe it, it's not also, and you've heard me say this earlier this week, it's not, suicide is not always a function of an underlying seething depression that has somebody finally check out with so much pain that they had to go. Like sometimes it's not that suicide does not equal depression is kind of what I'm saying. And the report of suicide does not equal suicide. This double combination has created a third event, Sam. And this is what I want to bring up. A very troubling little trend that has showed up in the internet the last 2 days. People of very high caliber, usually generally highly educated or highly renowned mental health providers of some sort, are now having us be warning us not to overlook people who smile too much. That smiling too much is very possibly a sign of an under-expressed seething depression that may, in fact, be on the brink of suicidal and require emergency treatment. The effects of this concern, as it now seeps into the collective consciousness, could be extraordinary. Meaning, even if you learn how to smile as a way of just getting that the world is like, it is what it is, but I can smile anyways, you now will be suspect to those highly educated mental health provider followers to be seen as being very suspicious and perhaps hiding an underlying dangerous, you know, increased likelihood that underneath it all is a brutal depression that's just smoking. I'm really concerned about this. And as you know, Sam, I've had a little bit of experience with this suicidal conversation.
Sure. Yeah. No, you've dealt with many people on the brink. Well, in terms of the sort of the speculation part of this, certainly there's always room for doubt in any news that we receive these days. And that's an unfortunate fact of modern life. My gut instinct is not to doubt this particular suicide report, nor to doubt the others that you mentioned, but I do find there to be something to what you were just communicating that isn't entirely black and white around these warnings from mental health professionals to be dubious of people who smile a lot and to be skeptical about whether that smile is authentic or whether it is hiding an underlying depression. I think that's a slippery slope. And it's something that I understand on a certain level has some validity to it. Like that there is a sort of a cautionary kind of communication, and I'm not putting this into any conspiratorial context, at least from my angle. That there is a genuine cautionary communication that says, hey, you know, just because you think someone has a good life doesn't mean that they're not hiding things about underlying experiences that could potentially put them in danger. And be aware of that and be aware that, you know, we all, no matter what external personality we display, we all need connection. There's not a single human out there who is free of the need for human connection. I think there's a valid argument to be made there that part of the communication has pure intentions, has good intentions. What I'm a little bit concerned about and that I hadn't thought of until you just mentioned it, is the way that in this modern social media world that we live in, these ideas, these memes can get passed around and turned into some sort of thought construct that is potentially harmful to adopt on such a universal and global level all at once. You know, these memes that get passed around social media, such as the one that we're talking about right now, of be skeptical of someone who is smiling a lot. Like if that was something that a psychologist or a therapist or someone who is in the mental health profession said privately to someone and said, you know, just be aware. Just because someone smiles a lot doesn't mean that they don't have something going on inside that, you know, you might just want to be aware of. You know, just be mindful that that person might actually have something going on inside of them that requires some level of human connection that they're not asking for, or that they don't know how to ask for, or something like that. If that was conveyed in a private one-on-one conversation between, say, a therapist and a client or a patient or whatever, or a family member, a parent and a child, then it's one thing. But the sort of wholesale adoption of these memes at the scale that they get adopted and with the spontaneity in which they get adopted in the social media world, where it's suddenly a global meme. It's like, oh, we should really be, you know, anyone who we see smile a lot, we should be kind of skeptical of their, of what's going on inside. That creates, I feel like, some sort of unnecessary kind of paranoia. And it feels like it contributes to the fragility of our culture versus doing what it would be intended to do if it was in an organic conversation, which would be to see, simply make someone be more mindful. So that's kind of the take that I'm taking on it right at the moment. Your thoughts?
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. And I have this question that, you know, there was no indication whatsoever that even Robin Williams, who's now it's just like, you know, everyday news. I mean, now it's everyday news. Like, nobody doubts that Robin Williams committed suicide. Nobody does. It's just that, you know, everyone knows, and you got to be lost to think otherwise. And that's actually true with Bourdain too. There's nobody questioning whether or not that was a suicide. It's also no one questioning whether or not, at least at this point, it's soon to be, no one will be questioning in any way whether or not Twitch's was a suicide. And there'll be no question at all, about some of these other, like, these are star suicides is what they are. They're iconic suicides. Now, suicides are happening to 15-year-olds, 9-year-olds, 69-year-olds, at an alarming rate. People who are clearly depressed, isolated, and abandoned. And it's something about, if we pay attention to those who don't look suicidal, we're not even paying attention to those who do look suicidal, who have every business to be suicidal, who have every business to want to check out. Like, you know, they can't see their family, or their family's already dead or gone or whatever there is, or that they're, you know, they're lost or broke, or they lost their business, or they, you know, or whatever the problems are, they can't do something that they used to be able to do, or they're sick or getting sick often or something like that. There's just something that has, I guess I have been around corner reports of suicide when I've seen suicides declared with a minimal amount of information that would have supported a suicide in that particular case. Just like when you say suicide, it's sort of like the case is closed. When a coroner says suicide, that's the end of that. And in some cases, you know, they say foul play has been ruled out. And we just tend to believe that the coroner or the police report or whatever. In this case, I don't think people even know. I tried to look up, and I could be wrong about this. Like, what did Twitch do to commit suicide? I don't know. I don't know what he did. Did he hang? Did he shoot himself? Did he eat some pills? I don't know what he did. I think I read something about a gunshot to the head. And if you maintain, or if I maintain a level of healthy skepticism as to whether or not this was a suicide in the first place, let's say someone was out, let's say he owed some money. Let's say, you know, let's say he, you know, whatever, that he just had some enemies. Even a gunshot wound to the head is nearly impossible to call a suicide. Nearly impossible if no one was there. It's nearly impossible. You certainly can't do it confidently. Now, sometimes you can. Sometimes, like in the movies, you know, you have enough fingerprints and you look it up and you check all the relationships and shit like that. But by all token, this man, and indeed Bourdain, who no doubt, by the way, had some enemies. There's no doubt that Bourdain had enemies. You know, there's no doubt. And again, for those listening, I'm not necessarily like denying the suicides of these people. All I'm saying is if we sustain a healthy skepticism about this, that maybe that's what happened in one of the four cases. Or who knows, all four of the cases, who knows? Then the whole thing sort of falls apart and creates the possibility of a new diagnosis for which one needs to be concerned about being happy and showing it. That no one is going to believe someone who looks inordinately happy and in fact may just sweep them up so they can see the underlying depression that even that person doesn't know they have. Yeah. And that's my concern here. It's deep concern.
Or that someone who seems to naturally embody a loving presence is a mirror for dysfunction in this, that having there, because there's a sort of, I know nothing about Twitch, first of all, but I'm looking at some of the pictures that I've seen of him, video and so forth. I feel this sort of loving innocence almost. And that something that is kind of implicit in the subconscious message of this is that someone with loving innocence has no place in this world or can't handle this world that is so challenging, this world that is so potentially dark, this world that is so complex and so forth, that even someone with the strength of that loving innocence, it's too much for them. There's something kind of, I've had some conversations lately with friends around how it's like this kind of surprise, this shock around, oh my gosh, he seemed so happy and so fun. And it's like there's almost this sort of notion that how could someone who had such a joyful perspective on life be subject to suicidal tendencies and to actually follow through with suicide? And if that's true for him, what does that say about me? What does that say about me? Like this feeling of it's not, you know, my joyful presence implies a certain amount of naivete to the darkness of life. And should I, are my little thoughts or feelings, these lingering thoughts or and feelings of not really fitting in, should I take these things more seriously than I have been taking them? Am I suicidal? This kind of like, it seems to be triggering something in otherwise stable people to be themselves kind of considering the possibility of just kind of getting out of here because those thoughts and feelings happen to them as well.
Now we're talking. That's very great. Very great. Because when you watch this guy move, just some of the videos, when you watch him dance, it's not like he looks happy. I wish I looked that happy once in my life. as a dude on flow control. That dude is amazing. He is turning it. His face, his body, his movements, his conversation, what he wears, how he looks, his smile, the whole thing. It's like, that is a dude who's got some serious mojo going. And then we get, and he may have blasted himself in the head. Only may have, by the way. I'm still going only may have. Or someone might have blasted him in the head. That's also, that's like sacrilege to say that at this point. Or he might have died another way. That's also sacrilege. Because who am I to challenge the status quo? It's like a conspiracy theorist. And then, you know, you get swept under the rug. In fact, someone walks into your house and puts one in your head.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, in terms of the, in terms of this sort of nefarious, let's entertain the nefarious possibilities here, because I'm totally down with that. And again, I too will say that I have no goddamn clue what actually happened. And I'm just as willing to believe the story as not. I have no idea. Don't know the guy. Never really knew much about him. Maybe saw him once or twice before this whole story broke. Don't really know anything. However, to entertain a potentially nefarious narrative here, a public figure who is pure joy and happiness and freedom and has a successful life and is modeling that, to shut that down in a very public way and say, you know what? Your joy and your freedom have no place here. You know, well, that's in many respects, that harkens us back to this, the 1970 and Nixon and the war on drugs and shutting down the hippies taking psychedelics and saying, you know what, your joy, your freedom, they have no place here. We are the decision makers. We will decide the mood of this country. You do not get to decide the mood of this country. And so to entertain a potentially nefarious agenda here, there is certainly something there that has been practiced. We have evidence of that type of practice in the past politically in very obvious, well-documented ways, where a particular mood or mindset or that was being modeled by people within this culture was shut down because it was too free. It was too joyful. It didn't fit the mood that was being that those who were in power wished to have conveyed. And there was a big shift in 1970 with the clamp down on psychedelics. There was a big shift as, you know, the free-spirited hippie, pure free love community started to be, there was a dark side that came in that was very rapid and was not just it was not an organic outgrowth of the movement itself, but something that was influenced by the powers that be.
Yeah, it's not outside the realm of possibility that there would be
outside the realm of possibility.
Not in any way. There's a non-negligible chance, non-negligible chance that this did not go down as it's reported. It's not, again, let me just say for a third time, for those of you who are, you know, mourning the absolute fact that Twitch killed himself and the underlying depression that may or may not have may not like contributed directly to that. I'm not challenging that directly. I'm just reporting from a space of, we all know, no matter where we stand on any particular issue these days, that what we thought was true was not supported in the news. We all know that. And, you know, it's really easy, believe it or not, unfortunately, it's very easy to off someone and then call it suicide. You only need a couple people to comply for that, to make it happen. And, you know, you don't want to deny, I mean, you know, well, what's the cause, Fred? Well, racism certainly can't be overlooked. Some form of racism, that he could owe money, that he could be in a drug deal, that he could have had a relationship that went wrong with somebody, woman, man, and anyone. Or without question that he could have killed himself, without question. In fact, he probably did, because that's what we're told.
This also comes on the heels of some other news that I've been reading, which was to be expected, which is around pharmaceutical companies taking psychedelics and removing the trip from the compounds. So in trying to maintain the quote unquote benefit of the psychedelics without the trip aspect of it, in an effort to quote treat depression and anxiety in a safe manner, which is patently absurd, because what they're obviously doing is trying to, well, this is a whole other conversation, and we could potentially pick up on this after our little promo here midway. I'd love to explore this with you a bit more, because I'm sure you have plenty to say on this topic. But the notion that introspection and joy and freedom have no place in a society where it benefits so much from the slavery of the human mind. And this culture endorses a very myopic way of living, because that benefits the powerful in a way that keeps us in line, keeps us working for a machine, keeps us limited in terms of our imagination and what we perceive as possible, so that we can feed a corporate infrastructure that and not question whether this is actually, you know, the right way forward. There's a certain danger implicit in freedom. And, you know, there, I think throughout history, those who have endorsed freedom have frequently ended up getting themselves killed in the process. So there's a good place to segue to your promo. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's rock this promo. Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Fred again. I wanted to explain to you a little bit about one of the names I have called the Undoctor. What is the Undoctor? Well, after about 15 years in the field of me being misaligned with what I was doing, because I was medicating people even knowing that medications were not the right answer, and I was diagnosing people even though I didn't always believe that they had the diagnosis that I said that they had, even though they did meet the criteria, etc., I like seeing humans for exactly who they are and who they're not, and not as a diagnosis. So in 2006, I began the process of becoming the Undoctor. I unmedicated, undiagnosed, and then undoctrinated a bunch of people. Like, people no longer had to come to a psychiatrist because their condition's cleared. This isn't true for everyone. It may not be true for you. But for some folks who know that their diagnosis doesn't fit and who know that they don't want to keep going through with medications and don't want to be seen as someone who's defective or afflicted, this turned out to be a great intervention. over time, I stopped doing that, and I no longer do a whole lot of conventional psychiatry. Now I just help people walk through their life and find their true voice. I connect with people straight up, not as if there's a power gradient between a doctor and a patient, but it's two humans connecting and resonating with each other. As it turns out, that's where all healing emanates from. So today, I've developed the Welcome to Humanity brand over the last 6 or 7 years, and that really takes into consideration all of this. It is self-explanatory. Basically, each and every experience that we have with humanity is just as exquisite as another, even if it's deeply uncomfortable. From there, we get to actually share these human experiences. From there, we get to resonate and connect, and from there, healing takes place. I also have been helping people with their true voice, and that's why you're here today at True Voice with Dr. Frey. I help people find that true voice, really their authentic self, their core value system, and then deliver it effectively into a world that is eagerly awaiting to hear you. Without your voice, no one will ever hear you. And without your true voice, no one will ever know you. But with your true voice, you can find healing, peace, and love. True voice is what it takes to end all wars. So, welcome to True Voice with Dr. Fred. Got to fix that burp a little bit at the end.
All right. So, yes, here we are back again.
Yeah. So this thing about psychedelics, man.
Yeah. So basically, yeah, treat people, keep them from, make the pharmaceutical companies seem like the good guys here.
They are.
We're taking the scary.
Are you suggesting that they're not? Let's start this half the same way we started the first half, because
you better take this scary and uncertain part out of the psychedelic experience, because we wouldn't want anything scary and uncertain. We wouldn't want anyone to actually experience anything introspective, because that would be scary and uncertain. We don't want people to actually have to confront what's going on within them and what has been carried with them through their ancestry, and to see through the veil of the bullshit of what they've been sold by those who wish to convey their agenda. We wouldn't want any of that to happen. We just want to treat the symptom. And, yeah, you know, I know this is a loaded topic for you, so jam with me here.
I will. So I got my friend here. Let's have him poke his head. He's been doing this amazing video shoot with us today.
All right. What's up, William? Good to see you, buddy.
See you as well.
Yeah. He's overheard our comment, and for sure he could fill in the next 27 minutes on this topic for sure. You overhear what Sam's talking about? I guess the new news is the pharmaceutical companies are considering, or maybe they've already done it, like moving the trip out of the drugs that they make, out of the psychedelics that they're making pharmaceutically available, so that they can treat the symptoms without giving the patient oh so dangerous opportunities to alter their consciousness and become immensely introspective as a way of dealing with the issue. So your thoughts on it? What are your initial thoughts on that?
I mean,
this is William Curry, y'all. Yeah. William was on a few weeks ago.
Isn't that what we're doing across the board with like all medicines? We're going down to the Amazon, taking these plants, removing all the benefits of these plants that you get from taking that plant as its entirety, and boiling it down literally to a single molecule that may or may not do this thing, right? It's a very Western way of approach. It's a very segmented way, and they're segmenting the plants, right? There's what's the word I'm looking for, the molecules of the plants being segregated. I think that is like the segregation being happening like with the individual itself, from our own consciousness, from our own health, from our own autonomy, to be able to survive without being in that medical field, right? Without having to go and get a prescription to be able to survive, you know, to be empowered to have your own tools, right? Yeah, I would not take any psychoactive substances that have the psychoactive substances removed.
Yeah, and it feels to me with the bigger issue here is that somewhere along the line we've decided to allow there to be this hierarchical function within culture where certain people are allowed to treat the rest of the public like children. That they say, okay, this is what we know is safe. If you want to do this safe, if you want to do something safely, if you want to treat your symptoms, if you want to show up to work and have a little bit more ambition about the spreadsheets that you're doing, there's a safe way of doing that. And we've got the safe way. It's just as much up to the public. Actually, it truly is. In a democratic society, it's up to the public to say, you know what? Fuck you. I'm tired of being treated like a child. I am an adult just like you are. Start treating me like a fucking adult and give me the freedom to be able to make my own choices about what I do to my mind and my body. And if millions of people overnight decided to say, fuck you, stop telling me what is safe and what is not, we'd live in a very different world.
Yeah, yeah.
And the fact is, we live in a culture where the vast majority of people want to be free, but they also want to be treated like children. They have bought into being treated like children and allowing governments and corporations to decide what is safe and what is not. And so the public plays into this dynamic. So we could look at the pharmaceutical companies and we could look at the federal government and say, are you kidding? You know, we could look at them and say, it's up to you to start to be more considerate of us. But ultimately, it's up to us to say, you know what, we're tired of being treated like children. Yeah. This is the wrong dynamic here. We're not your goddamn children.
Yeah.
There's also a really interesting conversation to have. And I'm not sure where I would fall on this at the moment. But the question would be, like, is it the government / businesses and capitalist society? Is it their job to keep people from dying? You know what I mean? Like, is it their responsibility to provide safety? And I think that's what they're selling us. I think that is what we want. And that's the way you get more power, is you sell what everybody is scared of. You sell the solution for it, which is safety, right? Security. But, you know, like, look all over the world. Like, governments are not safe. They are not protecting their people. They are. And if that is their goal, they're doing a really bad job of it, right? In America, how many deaths do we have through, you know, related to obesity and all of its complications, like diabetes and like all these other things? Like, our government is not mandating anything that makes food safe, right?
Quite the contrary, it makes it profitable.
The whole government is about profit. It's all about the American dream, the prosperity of all this stuff, and it has nothing to do with keeping people safe. So use the guys that we're removing this thing to keep you safe is just BS talk for, like, we're gonna make a shit ton of money off of this. This is how we make a shit ton of money without changing laws and changing without getting backlash from more conservatives and all these types of things. And I think we need to wake up to that fact, that the solution is to not give the government more power. Like, you know, not to go off on like a small tangent, but like all the stuff that's
been happening. Tangents are welcome here.
Thanks, Ben. Yeah, all the stuff that's been happening over the last years, like, you know, I always like Black Lives Matter. I'm not an expert on the topic, but from my perspective, like, you're asking the government to mandate changes. But that's the system that you're fighting. That's a system that's literally doing the oppression. You want to give the oppressive system more power. No, give it to the communities. Bring it back to the communities. Like, that's where the power really is. Power is in groups of regular people, because there's way more of us than there are of them. We're so disconnected and separated from each other. And pharmaceuticals have their part in keeping us separated. Technology does as well. All these things that are making a lot of money in our country, and it's you don't gain more freedom by giving more power to the system that's oppressing you.
There you go.
That is amen, brother.
Yeah,
great perspective.
Yeah.
So What about those giants? That's what I want to know. Yeah, it's an intense thing. It's a, you know, as I listen to the two of you and realize that you're both sort of, you know, the reason you're both, I feel very close to both of you is that you're kind of an alter ego for me. And as I hear the two of you sort of stand up together and, you know, one up what's wrong with, I'm not going to do this. I'm not your child. And you're making money when you're really saying something, but you're deceitful and you're deceiving me and I can't stand it anymore. And you're bad authorities. I am left pointed at the area which says, you know what, you two and Fred and you, Fred, no one's listening to you saying we're not going to do this anymore either. That in some ways, it's a little bit too late to bitch only, you know, and we don't have anything else to do quite yet. But yeah, we're going to get hundreds of thousands of people together one day. You know, you think that's happening? I mean, all that really has to happen when that happens is that someone says you're not allowed to meet in groups bigger than 10. And we already know that, or maybe it was 8. Oh, no, tomorrow it'll be 16. Except when you're in an open forum and then it's 11. Except when you're in a restaurant, then it's 32. And we're like, okay, thank you so much. Thank you for those rules. And just getting together, like even these conversations are now so, you know, there's so much surveillance, so much monitoring, so much, you know, so much even, you know, identification. I wouldn't be surprised if we all three of us are hit up with something in our Amazon account tonight, like a book written on what we're talking about right now. And, you know, it's just like, you know, it seems like it's kind of funny, you know, that Spotify will show up with the perfect song for us next. We're in pretty deep. We're in pretty deep. And just bitching about it is, it's a good thing, but it's not, there's no real weaponization inside of us screaming that we're not kids either.
Well, and you know, and as I step back from the bitching too, I also recognize that the bitching actually in a certain way perpetuates the problem, because in a sense, you know, and I just had my little rant and I see that, and I also get that on some level the rant itself contributes to this power dynamic. And if I really want to separate myself from the power dynamic and say, no, you know what, I'm not playing that game, then it's not about ranting against anything. It's about going, I'm not playing that game, which is a very different type of mentality than ranting and ultimately contributing energy to the very dynamic that I feel is dysfunctional. And this dynamic is not something that is anyone's doing. There's no single entity to say, oh, you made this happen, you're the bad guy. This is something that has organically been created and seeded and germinated through the collective human consciousness and the fact that we have been living from a fear place for our entire lives, and that our survival tendencies have gotten us to this point where we have created these hierarchies of power structures in order to protect what we think needs protection, which actually doesn't require protection. And it's my individual responsibility to deal with that myself versus change a system. If I deal with that myself, then I am taking on my part of the responsibility, my component. That's my part, is to work on, oh, where am I outsourcing my own autonomy, my own sense of self-governance to some entity outside of myself, whether that be a divine cosmic entity or a federal government or a pharmaceutical company, it's all the same. Where am I outsourcing that in my own psyche and denying myself my own autonomy in terms of self-governance. And if I'm in a space of reaction like I just was, on some level, I'm subconsciously still perpetuating the game in which I despise.
Yeah. So you both know that I've recently been dipping into my brother's recent book, not so recent, 3 books ago, called At War with the Obvious. And brilliant book. I'm very moved by reading it. And let's see if I can paraphrase a little bit. It's sort of like wherever we go, one of the space, when things like the obvious or the assumed break down, and then you have the opposite, which is the sort of anti-obvious and anti-assumed, and have that break down, then at some point there's a mismatch between what we know to be true and what's true. And then at some point, the only thing we can do is, I know he'd slap his little brother for fucking this up, but at some point we reach a point where it's, I want out. I this doesn't work for me. There's so much tension in between what I know to be true and what's true. There's so much tension that I cannot tolerate words being spoken that can't be attached to a certain trueness, a certain realness, a certain consistency in how I think and how things are. And we reach a point, really a desperate point, where we want out, where you know, we scream, or we become violent, or we become suicidal, or we become something, only to learn that none of those things are true exits out either. And we're left in the morass of what humanity has, the human experience is, but in that hole, somewhere in that deep, dark hole that can't be consolidated or reconciled, we're left in this intensely uncomfortable pain for which we are forced to lean on sort of the next best idea. And then buy that, even though we don't buy it, you know, and off we go into our next reaction versus response. Or do we create a divinity, or we create a collective consciousness, or we create a personal, you know, security system, or we create whatever we create. And we get bounced around inside of the limitations of our thought language, thought linguistic, you know, axes, and the power of words loses its power, but it's all we have. And the discomfort becomes unspeakable, and then you can't, and then you want out. So maybe you take drugs, or maybe you have sex, or maybe you kill yourself, or maybe you hurt somebody, or maybe you do something, maybe, or you buy into the next level untruth, even if you do so with regret or concern, or even an acknowledgement that what you're presently believing is not consistent with a real logical or viable truth system.
Yeah, and one could make the argument that this is actually behind spiritual practices, which have been practiced for thousands of years too, in terms of the way out component. You know, that some of the ways out that you have just mentioned are sort of ways of soothing, self-soothing through drugs or alcohol or sex or whatever, as a way to temporarily find a sense of oblivion from the material world and all of these dynamics and functions that happen within our world. And then there are those who historically have practiced putting themselves through experiences that most of us would never commit to, including myself, to actually work on transcending the karmic cycles once and for all. You know, you have the sadhus in India who have one arm up in the air for 60 years and they've been holding it there for 60 years, or they hang cinder blocks off of their genitals because they are just looking to go so deeply into the discomfort that the discomfort no longer has control over them. And they transcend that which kept them bound in the karmic cycles of rebirth. And so there's that as well. This is not a new phenomenon. This is something that even in simpler times has been practiced for thousands of years. I mean, Buddha got to where he got through wanting a way out. He saw this whole futility of the karmic cycles of birth and rebirth and wanted a way out. And how about those giants?
Yeah, I'm on them. Yeah. We're, you know, the futility of the futility, you know, in ayahuasca, the one of the loudest experiences for me is the mismatch that happens from what I thought about what I knew and what I now know to be nothing like what I thought I knew. And then, like, it's sort of like these two realities in the midst of immense, harsh, central nausea, like I've never experienced before, pass by each other, like the ends don't meet. And then all that's left to do in that mismatch is just like purge, because there's no other thing to do but purging it. Also, it's almost like purging is the answer in that experience to bridging the gap between what's real and what I thought I knew about what was real. It's a very, very, very uncomfortable fucking situation when that happens too.
Something very common in these experiences, these psychedelic experiences too, is having your body literally be taken over, your body and mind be taken over by something that transcends your conscious thoughts about movement and expression as well, and spontaneously moving through and being moved, being danced, being animated by something seemingly greater than you, but actually that is you. Mm-hmm. And as I move throughout my day, I try to, as many moments as possible, remember that animation actually is here for me to embody at any given time. And even right now, as I'm sort of gesticulating in this conversation right now, I'm letting myself feel as though that's a dance that's part of a greater whole, that's part of the larger consciousness and energy that I have access to. But in my forgetting of that, in my normal state, I reduce my awareness down to this thinking mind that is in this form that I know as myself, that I see in my mirror and see in my Zoom rectangle all the time. And I forget that I'm part of this larger dance of the cosmos. Now, if I can remember that throughout my day and not need a drug to remember that, then perhaps I can play in that more joyful expression in a way that I really am taking greater agency over the movement of both my mind and my body.
Hmm. There's something about when what you say, or at least, you know, it's like I feel like I aspire to that. I somehow feel like, you know, usually you're a step or two or a mile or two or a life or two ahead of me in pursuing that. And as I listen to you, maybe that's not true. Maybe you see me ahead of you, but it doesn't really matter. Neither is true. There's something, the stopper is this notion of terror of death. terror, like, wait, if I do or think that, that could mean annihilation and death, and that's the last thing I want in this life. And I will do whatever I can to avoid the notion of impending or causing my own death. And going back to the first topic of the day, seeing death as simply the failure of life, as if when you die, you have lost, you have surrendered to this effort, to the futile effort to stay alive longer than you did. And that death is a failure of life is a thought process that has suicide seem like it's the ultimate tragedy, when it might not be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, there are layers upon layers of which we can look at this subject, and not to ever, we need to make sure never to deny the importance of the narrative that we create around life and death. You know, Krishnamurti, I found, had some of the most profound things to say about the subject of death. And he was saying that we mistake continuity for life and death. The timeline that we associate life with things that are continuous, with the continuity of my bank account, the continuity of my relationship, the continuity of my body, but that life and death transcend continuity, that there is not, that the notion of continuity is simply a way for the brain to be analyzing and experiencing the movement of life through the material form, but that ultimately life and death are something that are a separate subject altogether from continuity. That's simply a mental function. It's not the totality.
Amazing. He's amazing, isn't he? Mm-hmm. He's yeah. Fucking amazing. Yeah. You're fucking amazing, Sam.
Well, that was just quoting Krishnamurti.
Not a lot of people can explain Krishnamurti at the level you just rolled that out. So you are amazing. Completely got you. We all got you. It's very beautiful. Thank you. All right. It's 6:59. We could go a couple more hours, and maybe we should go next time together, even the three of us, perhaps. Great topic, Sam, and great topic, William, as well. Thanks for joining us. And Sam, I will catch you around the corner. And William's got some more videos to shoot for me. We're putting together this
heel together,
and it's some great videos. We've already shot 12. We got 8 more to do today. And thanks, TJ. It's been great being with you. And it's time for now to bid us all farewell. And
keep living and keep loving, fellas.
Living and loving. Peace.
Peace.
Hello, everybody, and I just wanted to thank you for getting through another episode of True Voice with Dr. Fred. Wasn't that great? It is so much fun to interact with people and then interact with my listenership about really finding True Voice and then bringing it forward. I really have never done anything more important than this, and I'm finally aligned with myself by helping others find their true voice. Let's find your alignment. What do you really want in your life?